We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 5, verses 1 to 13. This is Chapter 5, Final Instructions to Maharaj Parikshit. Verse 1. Shishuvacha Achanu Vanyate Pikshanam Vishvatma Bhagavanari Yasya Prasadjo Brahman Rudra Koda Samudhavam. Shukadev Goswami said, the Srimad Bhagavatam has elaborately described in various narrations the Supreme Soul of all that be, Personality of Godhead Hari, from whose satisfaction Brahma is born, and from whose anger Rudra takes birth. Mukam karati vachalam mangam langhavate giri yakipandamam vande shi guru dinatavinam om gyana timirandasya gyananjana sharakaya chakshuraminitam yena tasmai shi guru namaha. So what do you remember from the last class on annihilation?
Four types of annihilation.
Namitika, occasional. Prakritika, Atyantika, Nityada. Right, four types of annihilation. Very good. Very good. What else? Anything else from the last class? Yes.
Vanimesha.
Of the
Lord Brahma.
Life of Lord Brahma. Vanimesha. Half second. Okay. Yes, Kapit. All these universes like a mustard seed. How insignificant we are, knowing that the universe is like one mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds. Okay. Yes. Yeah, everything has cause and effect. You can see the effect by the cause, so therefore it's not real. It's illusion. But he's the cause of all causes. He has no cause, so therefore he is the absolute truth.
The gross senses is not real.
Because it's visible to the gross senses, therefore it is not real. When annihilation takes place, like a movie going backwards. Yes, like creation, but backwards. Yes. They don't. Yeah. In the Naimitika annihilation, at the end of day of Brahma, the sun and the moon are still there, and the higher planets are there. And they shine in the higher realms. Yes, Kapit? The qualification of the monkeys, they were surrendered to lotus feet, Parvati. Okay, you can see Krishna as he is if you do. Do not try to conceptually manipulate. Hare Purush.
There is no other boat for crossing the material ocean except Lila Katha Rasa.
Lila Katha Rasa is the only boat for crossing the ocean of material existence.
And to offer something like Gyan for that purpose is like offering garlands to a hungry person.
Okay, and to try to use Gyan to cross the ocean is like offering garlands to a hungry person. To someone who's suffering in this world. And what to speak of karma. Yes.
This book appearing in the narrations of the Supreme Lord is the answer of Maharaj Parikshit's question. The question was, what's the duty of a man about to die?
Okay. The answer to the question, what is duty of a man about to die? And that is to hear the narrations of the pastimes of the Lord. And that is the boat to help you cross the ocean of material existence. Yes. The process of annihilation is the pastime of the Lord. Yes. Okay, so now we are in this chapter of instructions, final instructions. In this summary, it says, this chapter explains how King Parikshit's fear of death from the snake bird Takshaka was averted by Shukadeva Goswami's brief instructions on the absolute truth.
is having in the last chapter described the four processes of annihilation that act in this material world, Śrīla Śukadeva Goswami now reminds Pariksit Maharaj how he had previously in the third canto discussed the measurement of time and of the various millennia of universal history. So we're going to hear some more again in this chapter. Be prepared to engage your intelligence in the service of Krishna. So now, the prayer part. Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura has given a very elaborate summary of Śrīmad Bhagavatam and his commentary on this verse. The essence of the great Acharya's statement is that unconditional loving surrender to the Supreme Lord Krishna, as described by Śukadeva Goswami, is the highest perfection of life. The exclusive purpose of Śrīmad Bhagavatam is to convince the conditioned soul to execute such surrender to the Lord and go back home, back to Godhead. So here it says he made an elaborate commentary, and I'm also going to read some of that, not the whole huge thing, but I've got 3.5 pages out of 10. So, I mean, my pages, which are not... So, I mean, there's a lot of slokas here. So, I'll read. It's very interesting because we're going to hear so much gyan again, even though bhakti was the conclusion. Again, we're going to hear how you're not this body and this thing. So, Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura explains how Śukadeva was thinking, what was in his mind. Having completed the Bhagavatam, so we heard that in the last chapter, okay, so this is the Puranas, this is what I instructed. Śukadeva considered the matter within himself. Oh, it is improper. I have disclosed from my heart the great jewel among secrets and made it visible to all people. So he's feeling bad that he gave bhakti. The Lord has said, this bhakti is the king of knowledge and king of secrets, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam. In the scripture, I've explicitly revealed out of great mercy to Pariksit a subject which is the most secret, Sarva Guya Tamam. I've shown bhakti awards all results, both by negative and positive statements. So he said that akama sarvakama va. It doesn't matter if you want anything, you want everything, just worship Krishna in bhakti. You will get everything. Then he quotes 5-6, that was 2-3-10. Then he quotes 5-6-17. The wise, suffering from various calamities of material life, continually bathe themselves in the lake of bhakti. And because of its intense bliss, they do not strive for liberation, the highest goal, which comes of its own accord, since they have attained everything by being the servants of the Lord. And then he quotes 11:19-24. By those processes, those human beings who have actually surrendered themselves to me automatically develop love for me. What other purpose or goal could remain for my devotee? And then he quotes one of the prayers personified Vedas, which I'll sing, 10:87-21. Duravagamat matat vanigamaya tavata tanash charitamaham vita tiparivarta parishamanaha naparidashanti ke Chirapavargamapisharate Charana Sarojaham Sakula Sangavishistagriha. My Lord, some fortunate souls have gotten relief from the fatigue of material life by diving into the vast nectar ocean of your pastimes, which you enact when you manifest your personal forms to propagate the unfathomable science of the self. These rare souls, indifferent even to liberation, renounce the happiness of home and family because of their association with devotees who are like flocks of swans enjoying at the lotus of your feet. However, so we heard how he revealed bhakti in Śrīmad Bhāgavatam. However, the Lord prefers some matters to be secret. And then he talks about, remember that verse about parokshavada? That indirect is pleasing to the Lord if you say something indirectly. And he says, I'm also pleased by that. So then now we go back to Shukadeva's mind. Since I've revealed the greatest secret, I've become not so dear to the Lord. What shall I do now? I have finished writing the Purana. Let that be. Now I will try to hide the great secret of bhakti. Someone may impetuously show off a great secret jewel to all the people, then considering the matter, hide it in a box and place it in his treasure vault. He shows off another jewel, praising it as the ultimate jewel. Thus now I will teach Jnana to King Parikshit, so the people will think Shukadeva is teaching Parikshit Jnana. By the influence of the Lord's Maya, they will think Jnana is ultimate, and bhakti is only a means to attain Jnana. So he was worried after he revealed that bhakti is the highest. According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he's revealing Shukadeva's mind, and now we are going to hear Jnana again before Parikshit leaves the body. So the Lord, Vishnu Chakravarti comments, the Lord sometimes appears before the perfected devotees and tests them by offering them liberation. I will test the development of bhakti in my disciple Parikshit by teaching him Jnana. The wise should know this test is for the purpose of announcing to the world the steadiness of Parikshit's bhakti. The ignorant people will explain, the result of bhakti and Jnana is only liberation. But one should understand this is not my intention, because I have said that compared to liberation, bhakti is much greater. And where did he say that? In 5.6.18. Vajan patir guralam bhavatam yadunam daivam vyakulapati kvacha kinkorova asdeva manga bhagavam bhajatam mukundo muktim dadadi karichit smana bhakti yogam. O King Parikshit, Krishna was the protector, instructor, object of worship, giver of affection, and leader of both clans, but he was sometimes your servant. The Lord gives liberation, but not bhava bhakti, to those who worship him. So remember when Shukadev tested Parikshit another time? Yes, you remember, Vanamali, when was that? Okay. Which canto was that?
Six.
Six. Beginning of sixth canto. And he says, well, how can we help these people? And first he gave Jnana. Oh, yes, you should give them this knowledge, and this is very nice. And then Parikshit said, oh, no, first he prescribed atonement, actually. Karmakanda. First Karmakanda. Yes, atonement. This is the answer. But Parikshit didn't accept that. He said, no, I'm a king, and I see these people. I punish them, and they come back and do the same thing again. They do their atonement, and again they come and do the same thing. So karma is not the answer. Then he said, okay, Jnana then. But no. And then he realized that he would only accept bhakti. That bhakti is the only way to dissipate the ignorance of the people. So now, again, Vishwanath is saying Shukadev's mind. Finally, I will produce a work including the teachings of Jnana, which will be like Mohini Avatar, with different faces for different people. So the demons will be cheated from drinking the nectar. So this chapter is going to be that. It's going to be a lot of Jnana, you are not this body, but it's for cheating the demons. In teaching about Jnana, I will utter words first with one meaning and then indicate another meaning smeared with bhakti rasa, just to please the devotees. So we're going to have some parokshavada here in this chapter, and we're going to also have some bhakti rasa. Thus, by doing that, I'll make all the elements of Jnana that are unfavorable for bhakti, favorable for bhakti, by including them in bhakti. In this way, Shukadeva thought. So now, he talks about the verse 1 and how Brahma is born from satisfaction, or like mode of goodness, and Ruja from anger, or mode of ignorance. So he takes apart this. Brahma was born from the Lord's pleasure. This would mean Brahma was born from sattva gun, but he's not born from sattva, but rajagun. And Shiva arose from anger. So since the Lord is beyond the gunas, it's impossible he can have anger or tamas as part of his swarup. So these statements are exaggeration with another meaning. That from his anger, Rudra came. So it's something else. The Lord beyond the gunas is pleased with his devotees who serves him. He's angry at those who harm the devotees. So he does have anger, but it's not like that. The pleasure and anger of the Lord are Shuddha Sattva. So then he says, Brahma is an example of attaining good fortune from the Lord's pleasure. He is the cause of sadhana and sadhya, bhakti and prema. Devotees should strive for this. And the cause of destruction of sadhana and sadhya is the Lord's anger. One should strive to avoid this. This is the conclusion of the Purana. So some hidden meanings in this verse, that accept everything favorable and I reject everything unfavorable for devotional service. So here's another question. If Shukadev completed the Purana, why do we consider first canto and the remainder of 12th canto part of the Bhagavatam? So how can you say, okay, this is also, now it's finished, Shukadev finished speaking, and now we got so many more chapters here. And after four, then there's seven more chapters. So what about that? And what about the whole first canto? And Shukadev didn't come until the 19th chapter. So now Vishwanath is going to answer that question. So you might get this question. And there is a purport somewhere in second canto where Prabhupada talks about that too. That the whole Bhagavatam is actually Shukadev. So just as the preliminary and concluding portions of a sacrifice are also called the sacrifice, or the introduction to the drama and blessings at the end of a drama are part of the drama, so the beginning and concluding parts of Bhagavatam are considered part of the Bhagavatam. So then he quotes from Gita Mahatmya, Gita sugita kartavya kim anyai shasta vistarai ya swayam pad manapasya mukhapad mad vinisrita. One should recite the Gita. What is the necessity of any other scripture when Gita emanates from the lotus mouth of the Supreme Lord? So he's using this as an example. Though all 18 chapters of the Gita were not completely spoken by the Lord, they are said to be spoken by him in this statement. Similarly, though the last part of 12th canto was not spoken by Shukadev, it is also said to be spoken by him. This is the conclusion. So it's part. It's like the end and the beginning, the introduction and the conclusion of the book. They're also part of the book. And you wouldn't have the book, it wouldn't be, you have to have these things. So now a very interesting instruction to King Parikshit. O king, give up the animalistic mentality of thinking, I am going to die. Unlike the body, you have not taken birth. There was not a time in the past when you did not exist and you are not about to be destroyed. Very similar to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. So in the purport, it is quoted a verse from First Canto, where Parikshit says, Tamopajatam patiyantu vipra Ganga chadevi ditachita ishe Dijopashista kukastakshika vadasatalam gayata vishugataha. O Brahmanas, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul and let Mother Ganga, representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way, for I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created bite me at once. I only desire you all continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. So he's talking about his animalistic mentality, which he doesn't have at all. Even at the beginning, he didn't have this mentality. He was ready. He was already prepared, and he didn't care about death. So, purport, even before hearing Bhagavatam, King Parikshit was a Mahabhagavat, a great and pure devotee of Lord Krishna. There was actually no animalistic fear of death within the king. But for our sake, Shukadev Goswami is speaking very strongly to his disciple, just as Lord Krishna speaks strongly to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. So he's being very heavy, and he's giving Gyan just like the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Vishnachakravati Thakur comments, since Parikshit had promised to dedicate himself to hearing Bhagavatam, he cannot be accused of having animal intelligence. Thus, these teachings on Gyan are not meant for Parikshit, but for others who have animal intelligence. So he's addressing all those who have an animal intelligence and think they're going to die. Since Parikshit is his disciple, he addresses him, though it is meant for others. Similarly, Krishna addresses Arjuna in Gita, although teachings are meant for all people. The discrimination is described. Your body did not exist previously. Now it exists. In the future, it will be destroyed. But you are not born, and you are not previously non-existent. You are Jivatma. And Krishna says this statement is not unfavorable for bhakti. So in the purport of this verse, which was quoted, I have a little bit of the purport here. As soon as one is given up completely to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is not at all afraid of death. The atmosphere created by the presence of great devotees of the Lord on the bank of the Ganga and Maharaj Pariksit's complete acceptance of the Lord's lotus feet were sufficient guarantee to the king for going back to Godhead. He thus became absolutely free from all fear of death. So this was back in the first canto. He was not afraid. And he's not afraid. So how can he be afraid now? Now in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 13, King Pariksit is a good example of bhava. He's always anxious to see his time is not wasted in anything which is not connected with him. And nectar of devotion, he's also given as an example of one of the characteristics of bhava. Which characteristic of bhava is Maharaj Pariksit an example of? Another one. Yes. He is reserved and perseverant, in the words of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada also quoted that verse from the 19th chapter of first canto, verse 15. When a person is undisturbed, even in the presence of various causes of disturbance, he is called reserved and perseverant. An example of this perseverance and reservation is found in the behavior of King Pariksit. This example of his behavior, his remaining patient, even at the last point of his life, his undisturbed condition of mind, is an example of reservation. This is one of the characteristics of a devotee who has developed ecstatic love for Krishna. So he was a Mahabhagavat, obviously. He had the nine characteristics of bhava. And Prabhupada talked about him in one lecture in, I don't know where, G-O-R. Starts with G-O-R. Anyway, 97. Oh, Gorakhpur, yes. 71, Gorakhpur. He's a sixth canto, second chapter, lecture 24-25. And he said that Pariksit Maharaj simply was hearing. That's all he did. So if you have perfect hearing, that's enough. Any one of the nine items, if it's perfect, is sufficient. He said Pariksit didn't go to the temple. He sat on the bank of the Ganga. And he was very serious because he knew I'm going to die in 7 days. And he said, let me finish as soon as possible, just hear Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada said, not just hearing, he was questioning too. He was asking questions. He was intelligent. He wasn't just sitting and hearing, but he was asking questions. He was a scholar also. Pariksit was a great scholar, Prabhupada said. He was asking questions during the discourse. And the astrologers had predicted that he would be a great scholar. So if Prabhupada said Shukadeva was reciting and Pariksit was understanding, if there was some difficulty, he was immediately questioning. He's asking questions. So both guru and disciple became perfect, hearing and chanting. So now I have another verse from the first canto, 19th chapter, verse 16, the verse after this, where Maharaj Pariksit offers a prayer at the end of life. Punascha bhuya bhagavatyanante rati prasangascha tad ashayeshu mahatsu yang yang upayami shistim maityasti sarvatra namo dijepya. Again, offering obeisances unto all you brahmanas, I pray that if I should again take my birth in the material world, I will have complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna, association with his devotees, and friendly relations with all living beings. Three things. One, 19, 16. He wants to be attached to Krishna, association with his devotees, and friendly relations with all beings. So what level of devotional service is this? Madhyam. Not uttam, no. Madhyam arikari. He loves the Lord, he makes friendship with devotees, and he tries to enlighten the innocent. End of purport. Prabhupada says, Maharaj Pariksit was certainly going back to Godhead, but even if he were not to go back, he prayed for a pattern of life which is the most perfect way in the material world. Pure devotee does not desire company of a personality as great as Brahma, but he prefers the association of a petty living being, provided he is a devotee of the Lord. So that's reminiscent of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayer in his Manasadeha Geho. So he was, this is the most perfect life in the material world, to be a Madhyama devotee. That's the perfection. Verse 3, now he's making a prediction. You will not take birth again in the form of your sons and grandsons, like a sprout taking birth from a seed and then generating a new seed. Rather, you're entirely distinct from the material body and its paraphernalia, in the same way that fire is distinct from its fuel. Yes. So here he's comparing the soul to fire and the body to fuel. But we will hear a very wonderful analogy later on in these verses that explains this much more specifically. So this is especially for Indians who believe in reincarnation, and others also. Purport: sometimes one dreams of being reborn as a son of one's son in the hope of perpetually remaining in the same material family. And I have heard that in India they put a tulsi leaf somewhere on the body of the dying person, and then they look for the newborn child to see if the leaf is there. It's like a birthmark. They look for that. And my son is a huge, looks like tulsi leaf on his back. And anyway, but I didn't do that, so I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I heard that. Some Indians told me, or I read it somewhere. They're hoping to come back in the same family because they're very attached. Yeah?
Somebody named after their grandfather.
Yeah, so they named the children after the grandfather that died. Yes. Yeah, I know one of my friends from Nepal. She had a grandmother. It was 104 years old. And that grandmother stayed alive until she got married. Then she died, you know, just the day after their marriage, this grandmother left. And then this one became pregnant. and a girl was born. She's living in Vrindavan. So, and that one was a great Vaishnavi, too. That her grandmother was a great devotee. She made the whole family devotees. So, could be that she wanted to live in, be born in Vrindavan and live in Vrindavan. Could be. So, yes. But that's different, of course. You want to be with the devotees. And she was very attached to her granddaughter. And the granddaughter was taking care of her at the age of 104. Maybe she's still taking care of her now. She's 2 years old or something. Anyway, these things happen. A father, okay, it's stated in Shruti Mantra, Pita Putrena Pitrinam Pitriman Yoni Yonau. A father has a father in his son because he may take birth as his own grandson. Wow. So they're really thinking ahead that my son may be my grandfather in my next life. Or even my father in my next life. Purpose of Bhagavatam is spiritual liberation, not the foolish prolonging of the illusion of bodily identification that is clearly stated in this verse. Okay, now we have another analogy that's been spoken of in Bhagavatam before. For again, in a dream, one can see his own head being cut off and thus understand that his actual self is standing apart from the dream experience. Because if your head were really cut off, then you wouldn't be seeing it, right? Similarly, while awake, one can see his body is a product of the five material elements. Therefore, it is to be understood the actual self, the soul, is distinct from the body it observes and is unborn and immortal. Now we're still trying to separate the body and the soul in these verses. This had a similar verse, 3:7:10. The living entity is in distress regarding his self-identity. He has no factual background, like a man who dreams he sees his head cut off. So there's no real reality like that, you know, to see your head cut off in a dream that you couldn't see. This is a hallucination. So in the same way, Prabhupada says that our concept of thinking that we are God and we are the controller, that's like a hallucination. We are hallucinating. That this is amnesia. That, like they say, you go in the mad hospital, someone says, I am Napoleon, someone says, I am this. So we are also saying, I am this, I am that. And Prabhupada also said that it's like a big madhouse, the material world. It's like a big mental hospital. And all the patients are thinking they are somebody they are not. Misidentification. 7.7.27, a similar verse. Through polluted intelligence, one is subjected to the modes of nature, and thus one is conditioned by material existence, like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. So what is the solution? Take shelter of a spiritual master. At the end of that purport, Prabhupada says, just as one suffers pain when his head is cut off in a dream, in ignorance one suffers not only while dreaming, but also while awake. So in the dream, you know, it's just one suffering, but now we're also suffering even when we're awake. Without the mercy of the Lord, one continues in ignorance and is subjected to various distresses. So verse 5, when a pot is broken, the portion of sky within the pot remains as the element sky just as before. In the same way, when the gross and subtle bodies die, the living entity within resumes his spiritual identity. Sounds impersonal, but it's not. Verse 6, the material bodies, qualities, and activities of the spirit soul are created by the material mind. That mind is itself created by the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord, thus the soul assumes material existence. So what does this mean? It means we are not this mind. The mind is not what you are, what you are thinking. All these, the thoughts that are material, this is coming from Maya, from illusion. It's not your mind. It's somebody else dictating to you these things. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, the method of how the covering consisting of the body made of Maya is produced is described in order it can be destroyed by knowledge. So he says the mind creates the body of the Atma, so from subtle to gross. Time of death, according to thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, one receives a body. And he's quoting 10.1.42. Changes of body are due to flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. So this is the story of life. And the next verse is a very nice analogy, and it will be explained by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So listen, now we're back to the lamp analogy. A lamp functions as such only by the combination of its fuel, vessel, wick, and fire. Similarly, material life, based on the soul's identification with the body, is developed and destroyed by the workings of material goodness, passion, and ignorance, which are the constituent elements of the body. So material life is the lamp. Now we will hear what are the other things, because it's hard to understand just by hearing this. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives us a commentary where we can understand much easier. So the transformation of light into a flame takes place by four things: oil, vessel, a wick, and fire. Oil represents karma. So the fuel that is burning, helping us to keep in samsara, or material life, the fuel is our karma, and that's the oil that keeps it burning. The karma keeps it burning. So the lamp is samsara. The lamp is material life. And the oil that makes the fuel to keep it burning is our karma. The vessel is the mind. So the container for the fuel is our mind. I'm going to let you guess. What is the wick? You know, wick is that little thing. Desires. Huh?
Desires.
Oh,
no, fire.
No. Yeah. What is the wick? We've got the oil is our karma.
Body.
Yes, the body is the wick. The body is the wick. And the fuel is our karma. The body is the wick. What's burning? It's our body that's burning the karma, right? The body is burning our karma. And the last thing is the fire. And that is consciousness. That is consciousness. So imposition of consciousness. So this is the story. What is the oil?
Karma.
What is the vessel, container?
Mind.
What is the wick?
Body.
The body. And the fire is our consciousness.
Position of consciousness.
Yes, very good. So, in the next verse we'll hear a little bit more about this. The soul within the body is self-luminous, and it's separate from the visible gross body and invisible subtle body. So the fire, of course, the lamp is the lamp of material life, but the fire, this consciousness, is something special, the consciousness. It remains as the fixed basis of changing bodily existence, just as the ethereal sky is the unchanging background of material transformation. Therefore, the soul is endless and without material comparison. So we heard about the body and material life, and now we're hearing about the soul. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, samsara, like the lamp, should be destroyed, but the atma, light, should not be destroyed. So the lamp we don't want, but we want the light, and that is the soul. The soul is actually the light, and the soul doesn't depend on this lamp, this material body and karma and all that, to live. The soul is separate, and it's above that. So where does the atma appear in the samsara? It's not involved in creation and destruction like bodies. Atma is different from gross and subtle bodies of the jiva. It's self-luminous, self-revealing. So it doesn't need this oil and wick and things to burn in container because it's self-luminous. It has its own light and it has its own revelation. As the basis of the body, which is made of matter, is without change. It has no end, ananta, and nothing can compare it to it, upama. The hidden meaning is as follows. What is superior to cause and effect is the final cause, paramatma. Like the ether, it is the basis of everything. So we're having parokshavada now, that not only the soul, it's the paramatma, super soul. 9. My dear King, by constantly meditating upon the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva, and by applying clear and logical intelligence, you should carefully consider your true self and how it is situated within the material body. So now we had this analogy, that's how we use our intelligence to understand how the soul is different from the body. Now, verse 10. The snake bird Takshaka, sent by the curse of the Brahmana, will not burn your true self. The agents of death will never burn such a master of the self as you, for you have already conquered all dangers on your path back to Godhead. So purport is explained. Real death is a covering of one's eternal Krishna consciousness. For the soul, material illusion is just like death. But Pariksha Maharaj had already destroyed all those dangers that threaten one's spiritual life, such as lust, envy, and fear. Shukadeva Goswami here congratulates the great saintly king, who as a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, homeward bound to the spiritual sky, was far beyond the reach of death. Verses 11-12, you should consider, I am non-different from the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Abode, and that Absolute Truth, Supreme Destination, is non-different from me. Thus resigning yourself to the Supreme Soul, who is free from all material misidentifications, you will not even notice the snake bird, Takshaka, when he approaches with his poison-filled fangs and bites your foot. Nor will you see your dying body or the material world around you, because you will have realized yourself to be separate from them. So he will leave, actually, before he gets bitten, according to Mahabharata. He had already left, and then just the snake bird just came. Vishnu Chakravarti explains that it's actually Brahma Aham means I belong to the Supreme Lord. So this translation was I am non-different, but Vishnu translates I belong to Krishna. So that's the devotional meaning. We hear this, you know, you can have the impersonal kind of, I am non-different, I will merge. But actually ours, we have the same understanding, but we say, I belong to Krishna. I belong to him. So seeing the lotus feet of the Lord or his svarup, you should surrender yourself to Paramatma Krishna, who has a nishka ornament on his chest, nishkale. You will not see Takshaka, who bites while pressing his two lips and relishing with his tongue using fire combined with poison. You will not see your body bitten by the snake or the universe to be different from Brahman. And the other meaning, there's another meaning, you will not see all this because you'll be fainting with bliss from directly seeing the lotus feet of Krishna. So, Haribo, you won't see anything except the lotus feet of Krishna. You won't even see what's happening. It's just like a So many analogies. The drunk person who doesn't notice his body. So Prakshit will not notice all these things, his annihilation of the body. He will just see Krishna's lotus feet. 13. Beloved King Prakshit, I have narrated to you the topics you originally inquired about. Pastimes of Lord Hari, the supreme soul of the universe. Now what more do you wish to hear? So in purport, in his commentary on this text, Jiva Goswami has elaborately demonstrated by citing many Bhagavatam verses the exalted devotional position of King Parikshit, who was fully determined to fix his mind upon Lord Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. So he's not afraid, and he's going to go back and he's going to see Krishna's lotus feet, the time of death. So any questions or comments on these verses? Yes. Nishka ornament. So there's a Sanskrit word, and he was interpreting it in another way. In that verse, where is it? Nishkali, which is free from material designation. It's in verse 11. And there's different meanings. So one is free from material contamination, and another meaning he gives is you will see the ornament on the Lord's chest. Yeah, so it's... So, again, one meaning for the Gyanis, another meaning for the devotees. Yes?
In the fifth?
Yeah, which... Oh, the broken pot. Yeah, that's a favorite of the Mayavadis. What?
Counter-argument.
Oh, okay. So they say it's... Okay, what is the counter-argument for... now we're just in the air in the pot, and the air outside the pot is non-different. So when the pot is broken, then you just go back to the outside pot. You just merge. Okay, so what is the counter-argument for that? The soul exists everywhere, whether they're in pots or not. Yeah. But do we say that the soul is eternally... Well, we just... Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse that counteracts that argument. That is, anybody know that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Okay, the soul cannot be cut. There's another verse. There's two verses in Bhagavad Gita. There's Nainam Chandanti Sastrani. There's another verse. Yeah, there's many verses. Nahanyate Hanyamani Shariye. Yeah, I was thinking of that one. Mamai Vangsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So we are eternally individuals. The soul is eternally individual. It's not like you break the pot and then the soul is, you lose your identity. You lose your false identity. So the pot is like the false identity of the jiva. But they think that if you lose your false identity, you lose all identity and you just merge. So it's not like that. They don't understand that in Brahman there is variety. They think it's in Brahman it's all one and there's no variety, but we understand there is variety and there is eternal individuality. Yeah?
Consciousness.
Yeah, covered consciousness. So
we regain the pure state of consciousness than what it is.
Yeah, right.
That can be further explained.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so they don't understand that what is the uncovered consciousness. They think the uncovered consciousness means, okay, it's just all one. But we understand that we are eternally individuals, and uncovered consciousness means that we are servants of Krishna, and we have our individuality. Achintya Beda, yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. Simultaneously, one in different. One in quality and different in quantity. Yeah, that's also... So, yes, we accept Brahman, but we accept that there's also something higher than Brahman. And there's a Param Brahman. We accept Param Brahman. We agree with the impersonalists that Brahman is everything, but we say that there beyond Brahman, there are two more steps. There are Paramatma and Bhagavan. So up to a certain level, we agree. But after that, when it comes to the final identity of the living entity, it's... Yes, we're Brahman, but what kind of Brahman? Yes, simultaneously one and different. Very good. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Now you should all be convinced. You're not the mind, you're not the body, you're not the false ego. So, yes?
Text 9.
Text 9. What's the question?
3 is.
Yes. Yeah.
9 is bhakti.
Yeah, 9 looks like bhakti. And that's also the same as Bhagavad Gita, Vasudeva Saramiti, when the jnanis finally reach the conclusion, they surrender to Vasudev. And so it's very similar to Bhagavad Gita there. Bahunam Jamanamante, Gyanavan Mam Prabhadite. Vasudeva Saramiti. Yes. That is. Yeah.
The lamp and the oil and the wick.
Mind. Yeah. The lamp is a whole.
Just the lamp as a whole.
Yeah, with the fire. Yeah, with the wick, with the, you know,
the
like.
The vessel is containing the oil.
Yeah, the vessel contains the oil. Lamp means actually, it means the whole, as a whole.
As a whole.
As a whole. And the parts are the oil, the vessel, the wick, and the fire. Yeah. Lamp as a whole. It has 4 parts. Yes, that's right. Yes, Prabhupada said, I give another example. So if you take away the oil, then the lamp of your karma will be finished. You won't have any more karma. So the same way Prabhupada said, if you a fan is moving and you switch off the fan, it may continue to move, but actually it's not going on the energy of the electricity. It's just some little residual movement. So the karma, it's reduced. He says it's reduced for the devotee. And what is it? Kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. That everyone has karma from Indra down to the insect, but if you're a devotee, then it's reduced. It is reduced. Yes?
It seems that very often great devotees are asking for the blessing to become or to be a Madhyam Bhakta.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sudama, the florist in the 10th canto,
yeah.
Like the Arjuna trees, or
yeah.
Parikshit Maharaj here.
Yeah.
It's a very common prayer.
They want to be preachers. Yeah. It's a common prayer for even, you know, the Uttamas, it seems. He's a Mahabhagavat, Uttamadikari. He's praying to be Madhyama. If I have to come back, then let me just be a preacher. If I have to come back. Yeah, that's an interesting observation. That it seems like they're much in a much higher level. But this is what they're praying for. So it's, in one sense, is an example for us, what we should pray for. In another sense, it's, you know, their desire to preach, to be a preacher. And that's what happened to Muchikunda, remember? Krishna said, you'll take one more birth as a preacher, as a Brahmin preacher. He was a great king, and he saw Krishna, and then Krishna said, okay, one more birth for you as a preacher. Yeah, so it's not so bad to be a preacher. We don't even have to pray for it. We can just do it. Right? Yeah.
In this material world, the Madhyamatriya reposition is very apt. The Uttamadhikari, they are actually, they are transcendental. They are not material world.
Right, right. Uttama is not in the world, really. The Madhyam is in the world. Uttama is beyond. Yeah. I mean, the Uttama becomes Madhyama. He comes down to the Madhyama. But sometimes he shows these Uttama. He does things that other people, that a Madhyama cannot do. There's amazing things that a Madhyama cannot do.
Madhyama is on a liberated platform. Madhyama is on a liberated platform.
It may be.
It's the beginning.
Yes, the beginning. It's a level of liberation. It's a level of liberation.
Maybe the prayer could also be that they are not entangled.
Not entangled. That's kind of negative. It's better to be positive. He was very positive. Did you notice? Affection for the Lord, or what was it? You know, affection for all living entities, a association of devotees and love for the Lord, relationship.
Sometimes the acharyas comment that this namo dvijabhya, namo dvijabhya, is the fourth blessing he's asking.
And which?
May always, as far as brahmanas are concerned, may I always offer obeisances to them, unlike this life.
May I always offer obeisances to the brahmanas, not like this life.
So that would, as Prabhupada said, that brahmana, qualified brahmana is kanishta adhikari.
Qualified brahmana is kanishta adhikari. Qualified brahmana is kanishta adhikari. I was back in 5th chapter of 11th canto. Yes, I believe.
The same about this last chapter, this Gyan, we also a devotee will see differently. Well, each verse seems to have two meanings, the way a devotee will take it, the way Gyan will take it. Is that what you mean?
I don't know about each verse, but some of the verses. Yeah.
Some
of the verses.
It's like my dear King, by constantly meditating upon the Supreme Lord, that's it, and by applying your theological intelligence, you will carefully consider your true soul and how it is situated within the material body. So, the Jnani will be thinking about differentiating the body from the soul.
Right.
Yeah.
On Krishna. And they'll even say Vasudev means something else.
Yeah.
Right? All pervading. It means all pervading as well. They'll say, okay, think of the all pervading Vasudev. And they'll think of. Yeah, they can interpret it differently. Any other questions? Comments? Okay, I'll. Yes.
In this last verse of chapter 4,
Shukadeva
says there is no other boat for crossing samsara except Lila Katha.
Lila Katha.
How about Namo Kirtan?
Well, that was the last chapter.
Verse 40.
There is. The last chapter, we had Nam Kirtan. So just so you understand.
So why does he say here that there is no other boat except Lila Katha? There is another boat, which is Nama Kirtan, it seems.
Because the two are non-different. Kirtan, Lila Katha and Nam Kirtan are non-different. They're the same. Yeah?
Actually, different name is coming to find the Lila.
Yeah. Names are coming in the Leela. If you have Leela Kirtan, then Leela Katha, then the names will come. You can't avoid it. Krishna's name will come. But also, I remember I was reading Bhaktisiddhanta's life, and he was saying that the Katha, the Leela, is an expansion of Nam. It's an expansion of the holy name.
Inner shock, right?
Or the Shakti, the Sarup Shakti of the name. So two go together. So you can't have Lila Katha without Nam. And Nam will be also, Lila will be there. It will come. If you do proper Nam, then Lila will come. And if you do Lila, Nam will come. So, and Prabhupada, often in his comments, he would say two things together. That is, Kirtaniya Sadahari and Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. These two we should do 24 hours. He says a few purports, he says that. Kirtaniya Sadahari and Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, together. And I find they go well together. That you can understand Bhagavatam by chanting, and you get inspired to chant by hearing Bhagavatam. Or you get power to chant nicely by hearing,
Also, another way to see is that the essence is kirtan.
Yes. The essence
so
is kirtan.
Lila kirtan,
Nam kirtan. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of kirtan. Kirtan is the essence. Right, that's a good way to see it. And in the last chapter we heard about Nam kirtan, now we have Lila kirtan. Yes. That's a good way also. Kirtan.
Can it be said that on the absolute level of the spiritual world there's many?
first there's many onlys. The only way is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, in the absolute, there's many onlys. That's a good one. Good observation. We've heard so many times, only this way, only that way, you know. But it all boils down to kirtan. Kirtan. But Prabhupada said, you know, there's 9 processes. Okay, you can take any one. But for Kali Yuga, it's kirtan. Harinam kirtan.
More
And more perfects. And Bhagavad Gita. Don't forget Bhagavad Gita class. Also. Yeah.
We had a nice the Vibhuti's chapter 10 on the screen yesterday.
Oh, we did that.
Devan and the Pandita.
Oh, good. All the whole opulences of the 10th chapter.
Did a whole 4-point presentation.
Wow. The whole 10th chapter.
Yeah.
Nice. That's good.
Illustrate.
Mm-hmm. Good for him. All right, O glorious Srila Prabhupada.